and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Reich. Got my fingers right. As Rob Gronkowski would say, it's freezy here in New York City today. Oh, balmy 4 degrees, but we are going to plow through because we are indoors. Big Thursday show. It looks like Anthony Davis might not be heading to the Lakers anytime soon. LeBron James might be out longer than we thought, but we are going to start with the Super Bowl. Now just 3 days away with thousands of storylines to discuss. The one that picked up the most steam yesterday is the one that had nothing to do with the game itself, a contract extension for Tom Brady. I mean, he will be in the Super Bowl for the third year in a row and the ninth time in 18 seasons. He is entering the final year of his deal next season, but he's 41 years old and he wants to play till he's 45. Robert Kraft was asked about extending Brady's deal. Here's what he had to say.
Well, think about it. The last 3 years, we've been privileged to go to the Super Bowl with a quarterback in place. I would be quite surprised if he didn't continue for quite a while as our quarterback.
The reality is I don't think many people thought I would be playing like this, even though I had a great belief that I would. And, you know, I think, you know, RKK has always supported me in my beliefs and thoughts. And, you know, that's why we have a great relationship.
All right, Chris, start with you. Do you think the Patriots should give Tom Brady an extension?
Absolutely. I mean, we knew they were on a collision course because what Bill Belichick does typically, veteran players, he's not going to sign them to long contracts or money they're going to have guaranteed. No one manages the salary cap better than the New England Patriots. And Tom Brady has helped them do that. It's for a number of years. He's taken below market price of what he should be, given that he is the best quarterback that's ever played the game. He could easily demand being the highest paid, but the system that they run. And he said something that's really critical there. They stop asking Bill Belichick about Tom Brady.
Yeah.
They start asking the guy that owns the team and writes the check, RKK, as he likes to be called by his friends. And him and Tom Brady have sat down and talked about this. So I wouldn't be surprised. He's got 1 year left on his deal. I wouldn't be surprised if they signed him to a 2 or 3 year contract extension. Brady wants to try to get to 45. And because of what he's done in the last 3 years, it made what Mr. Kraft thought and what Belichick thought, and what Brady thought, that's the law now in New England.
Yep.
Belichick was going to make plans with Garoppolo. He lost that battle. Tom playing the way he did on the field, because there's a lot of players like Tom Brady, great, and they think they're going to be able to play longer. Peyton Manning, he thought he had captured lightning in a bottle. Going to Denver, man, I'm playing with a great defense. That first season there, oh, man, he's shredding in it. They talk about, oh, his arm strength is not even back to 100%. Oh, the nerves, he's only going to get better. He thought he'd be playing till he was 44. But all of a sudden, age caught up to him. Tom Brady is doing what we haven't seen done, and he has deserved the right to get his contract extended and all the sacrifice he's made through the years. We haven't seen a star player sacrifice more from a financial standpoint to be able to help the team formulate and put other pieces around him like we've seen with Tom Brady.
So for some context to this, Brady basically redid his contract right before the Deflategate suspension 3 years ago. Part of that was because they needed to add years to it. Part of that was because they knew a suspension was coming, so they wanted to make his base salary as low as possible, where he would still get money, but when you lose 4 game checks, his base salary that year was $1 million. That way the NFL couldn't withhold that money essentially from him, like if he were making $16 million. So that's the contract that is going to run out after next year. I think most people thought when he signed that contract, contrary to what Brady was saying, that's going to be his last contract.
Yes.
Bill Belichick thought that, and he was grooming Garoppolo. The problem is, since then, what he has done is had one of his most efficient seasons ever in only 12 games, the Deflategate year, and then the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, followed that up with winning league MVP and getting to the Super Bowl, and followed that up with, even though statistically a down year for him, still a top 5 scoring offense he led, and they are back in the Super Bowl. So they're definitely going to give him an extension. You don't let quarterbacks go into the last year of their deal if they're any good, much less the greatest quarterback ever. But this is where, if I were Tom Brady, if I can put on my Nick Wright agent hat for a moment, I would try to exert a little bit of leverage and say, hey, I have taken below market deals every year. I will continue to do that for you. But I've said I want to play till I'm 45. I want this contract to take me till I'm 45. That's a 3-year deal, and I'd like it to be guaranteed. So if you want me to play for $15 to $18 million a year the way I have been over the last 4 years when other guys are getting 28, Rodgers and Stafford getting 30-plus, I will play for half of my market value. But I want 3 years, $45 million, call it that, tacked onto the end of it, and go ahead and make that a fully guaranteed contract. So I have it in writing that I'm on the New England Patriots until my set expiration date of 45 years old. And if you don't want to do that, no problem. We can do this year to year. You want to franchise me? You don't got a backup plan and have to pay me a huge premium off what you're paying me now? So be it. But I will continue to be a team player. I will continue to do what you guys want. I want you to do what I want, which is remove this discussion from the conversation. Remove this part of it. I want a contract that takes me up to year 40, to my 45th birthday, which is how long I've said I've wanted to play for the last 5 years now.
Is this even a conversation if the Patriots didn't make the playoffs this year or didn't make the Super Bowl this year? Would we be talking about this? Because it's certainly not based on the way he played this year. It's based on the fact that they are back in the Super Bowl again and a culmination of everything he has done.
The conversation with Tom Brady's always going to have a little slant on it. How much longer will he continue? Are we showing signs of him cracking? This regular season, not the best regular season he's had. It's worse than the last 3 regular seasons. But the ability for what they did. Yes, on the road, a losing record this year. Yes, 3-5. Blown out. Double-digit losses 3 times. Yes. But when you go to Kansas City and do what you did, right, because the season is, in its totality, it's the regular season and it's the postseason for Tom Brady. So if he didn't, if Patty Mahomes had beaten him last week in Kansas City, we'll be talking about Tom Brady getting an extension. Is he worthy of extension? How much longer can he play? But because he got through that game, yeah, we're all on board now to 45 when wasn't nobody on board but Tom Brady at the beginning.
I think if they had, you asked two different, to me, two very different things. If they had missed the playoffs, that would be such a giant blaring red horn or red flag, I should say, that okay, things are varied. There's no way they could have missed the playoffs unless Brady's play cratered, like Peyton Manning in his final year, when his play absolutely cratered. Then I don't think we'd be talking extension. But let's just say D4 didn't line up offsides. That game ends.
Lost to the Chiefs.
I think we're still talking extension.
Okay.
Because while we are judging Brady, and I've been judging Brady based on compared to Tom Brady, compared to other quarterbacks in the league, he's still clearly one of the 10 best. And if you have one of those guys, you don't let him go into the last year of his contract. Now, would he have the leverage or the juice to do what I'm suggesting? Say, I want 3 years, I want them guaranteed? Maybe not. But either way, unless if the Pats were 6-10 this year, then it would have meant Tom Brady fell off a cliff. He didn't fall off a cliff. He just wasn't the league MVP that he was before. But I'm very curious to see how this goes, because Brady has been very generous as far as not demanding money. And it's not like the Pats have used that money to acquire a ton of talent.
That's the other thing, right.
But they have.
Well, this is the thing. They have spent the money on the kind of talent they want, not the kind of talent that we would have on the show. They don't have breaking news. Oh, they signed this free agent. But how they go out, how you go out and get a guy like Hogan, how you go out and sign a guy like Stephon Gilmore, how you go out and get the other McCourty twin, all right? How you go out and keep Chung there as a safety. Like, they got good football players that they're paying good money to, so let's not think that they just went out and treated their roster like the Cleveland Browns
or something. No, and they didn't. It's not like they took the money that they saved on Brady and put it in the vault. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is what they have continued to do is leave themselves flexibility for when they've used the money they've saved on Brady to make sure they still have flexibility post-Brady. And if I were Brady, that would have bothered me. If it wasn't the sake, oh, we're back in the Super Bowl again. Our defense is playing its best of the year at the end of the season again. My offensive line, where they didn't pay for my left tackle, has been over the last 8 weeks of the season the best offensive line in football again. So, like, it's all worked for them, even though they've done it very differently than, say, the Los Angeles Rams went about it this year.
Well, we'll talk to one of the former Patriots coaches, Eric Mangini, when he joins us a little bit later. But coming up on the other side, is there still hope for Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh? Juju Smith-Schuster thinks so. That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We are back right after this. We got a big day of guests here on First Things First. Later this morning, Saquon Barkley and Matty Ryan will join us live from Atlanta. Got some fun conversations ahead. Stay tuned. And we will get to the Steelers in just a second. But first, some big plays from the NBA. Luka Doncic beating the shot clock with the quick one-handed shot from deep.
This was a fun night at the Garden last night. Probably Dirk's final appearance, and I think he had a season high 14 points last night, and the Garden crowd was loving it, and you got to see Luka. And the Knicks did what they're supposed to do, keep losing them games, New York.
Yeah, they got to lose.
In New Orleans, the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic driving, somehow finds Monty Morris on the other side of the court for the wide open three.
Oh, that's a nice pass.
Oh, he's the best passing big man in the league. There's no question about that. I think he's become, went from underrated, a little overrated, but his passing is properly rated.
Where does he rank as far as centers, Nick? Make a list real quick.
Centers, right now, NBA. Centers?
Yes.
Davis, Embiid, Jokic.
Okay.
Hold on. Celtics and Hornets and Terry Rozier are connecting with the high-flying Jason Tatum. The one-handed alley-oop.
It's a fun game. I watched this whole game. It looked like the Celtics were going to blow him out. Then the Hornets had a nice run at the end of the half to make it close. And the Celtics dominated the second half, again, without Kyrie.
T-Wolves, Grizzlies tied in overtime. Karl-Anthony Towns grabs the board, nails the fadeaway jumper, C, for the win.
Oh, this is a big shot right here. Tough game. Timberwolves need to win every game possible before LeBron comes back. Western Conference is tight. They've moved on from Jimmy Butler, and that depends on Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns' development. Great shot here. Great touch. Great arc. Still don't play no defense.
With that, to your point, C, with that game last night, only three back of the eight spot, one back of the Lakers in the nine spot.
Let's get back to some football now. Moving on to the Steelers. It wasn't long ago we were talking about all the potential for a Steelers team with the three Bs in their prime: Big Ben, Lev Bell, and Antonio Brown. Well, with AB's situation up in the air, it appears the window is closing on an era that had such great hope. Looks like only one of the Bs will remain on the roster now, and that's Big Ben. But Juju Smith-Schuster isn't giving up hope just yet. Take a listen.
In my dream world, what would I have? I would have Le'Veon Bell as a running back with James Conner. I'll have AB on I'll stay on the other side. And remember, winning the Super Bowl, the guys that we have, the guys that we keep. Obviously, it's tough, you know, situations like that where you can't control, you know, with Art Rooney doing and Mike Tomlin with that situation. But yeah, for me, it's more so like, man, let's keep the guys and teammates in the Super Bowl. Like, let's stop all the bullshit.
All right, what do you think, CeCe? Let's talk about the prognosis here for the Steelers and what they look like for next season. Do they still have a chance to work things out with Antonio Brown?
Well, Juju Schuster, they're definitely not going to have the team he envisions. Oh, man, get this guy, get this guy, get this guy. Because he's not making a whole bunch of money right now, so it don't matter to him who's on the team. Well, go get this guy. Then he put out a shout-out for Art Rooney so to make sure that he feels okay about him moving into the future. The Pittsburgh Steelers, since I've known them, they've always drafted and develop talented players. Now, so you talked about them moving on from L. Bell, moving on from AB. They've done this. Just say in the last 10 or 15, who else have they moved on from? Hines Ward, Jerome Bettis, all right? Mm-hmm. Mike Wallace.
Right, Emmanuel Sanders.
Like, they moved on from a bunch of guys. Drafted Plaxico Burress, developed him, send him off. Like, so Juju, just relax. They're going to draft some good players. They're going to develop players just like yourself. Now, this window is gone. I didn't think they would win a Super Bowl because I knew that how they function as the Pittsburgh Steelers with those three, that being A.B., Ben, there was a lot of dysfunction there. And I thought that it would get between them, what the potential of the team was and what they would actually accomplish. Now, we as fans, we can't vouch for being L-Bell, that contract there. We've never seen a situation like that. So how do we equate that into their success? Pittsburgh Steelers are going to do business a certain way, and how they decide to do business has cut into the potential of this group, how long they could stay together. They have made a decision as an organization. Ben Roethlisberger is their quarterback. They didn't just make this decision. They made that long time ago when Ben was on that team as a young player that went to the Super Bowl. They made that decision with L. Bell. Ben was a priority. Now with A.B., they're making the decision again. Ben is the priority. That's how they're going to move forward. So they're going to draft other players. They're going to develop other players. Pittsburgh has been very, very consistent at that. And I can't fault the organization, because they have drafted, they've put coaches there, that they had opportunity to be in the game that we're talking about right now. They blew those opportunities.
So I think we can disregard the first part of his soundbite. Le'Veon Bell is gone. He's an unrestricted free agent. He can go wherever he wants. The Steelers are not going. They might make him a cursory offer, but he is going to get big money.
He won't be back in Pittsburgh next year.
Okay. We know he's not going to be back. Antonio Brown, the door is still open. I would say it is more likely than not that they end up trading him. But as we've talked about, early in March, they owe him a roster bonus. They are not going to pay him that roster bonus and then trade him. So the fact that we have not heard, the most definitive commentary we've heard from the Steelers, I thought, was the ownership, Art Rooney II, when he came out shortly after the season and made it sound like it's over for Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. Since then, it feels like the commentary from the team has softened that stance slightly. But as we have discussed before, it's one thing if the Steelers want to reconcile. What evidence do we have whatsoever that Antonio Brown wants to reconcile? I think Antonio Brown feels like, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong, but I'm going to be an all-pro, I'm going to be a great player, and I'm going to get my money anywhere. If he wants to reconcile, he's not posting Photoshop pictures of himself
in a Niners
jersey. He's not doing. And one thing we didn't hear in that interview with Juju, and Juju was on a bunch of platforms yesterday, is, I've talked to Antonio, and he told me he definitely wants to be a Pittsburgh Steeler. Right? Like, he wasn't able to tell us that. And so I don't think it's impossible Antonio comes back, but it would take not a phone call, not a text exchange, a sit down between he, Mike Tomlin, and maybe some other parties as well, that I don't think Antonio's interested in, even if the Steelers might be interested in it.
If he is interested, if he does come back, what do you think is the harder relationship to mend, CeCe? Antonio Brown and Mike Tomlin, or Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger?
Mike Tomlin. Because Ben's had other wide receivers he's had difficult situations with. They'll get beyond that. You know the reason why? Because Ben's got the ball. And the only way to AB to be able to do his deal is to get the ball from the quarterback. So regardless of how much a wide receiver wants to complain, at the end of the day, the quarterback is almost always right because he's making the decisions. Now, I know Ben was also right in. AB didn't run the right route. Now, people will say, well, Ben was wrong for calling him out. Yeah, he was wrong for that. But the principle of it, A.B., and he's done this for a long time as far as, I'm going to ad lib. I'm going to do something else. And this time it made Ben look bad. And Ben was like, listen, enough of that. So I'm going to let the cat out the bag and tell the public what really happened. So the quarterback, that situation, we've seen that. That's rectified all the time. Mike Tomlin and the message point to the rest of the team. How is he able to be consistent? He's changed a couple coaches. Now he's going to have to change a few players. If he wants to gain control back of that football team, he's going to have to be able to do something to AB. He's got to be able to penalize him for walking out on the team. And the team has to be able to see some type of consistency from the time they make an announcement and what Mike Tomlin does with the other players, because the players see through that all the time. So if he's not consistent, it will eat away at his ability to be able to lead the team.
And if I'm Mike Tomlin, if they do move on from Antonio Brown, I am trying to get as close as possible with Juju and try to help Juju learn the lessons of Antonio Brown, which is, hey, man, no matter how productive you are, Juju was team MVP this year. He had 1,500 yards. He was out, or 1,200 yards. He was outstanding. But it can go sideways. It went sideways. You mentioned Hines Ward and Jerome Bettis. Those guys retired. Mike Wallace, didn't want to pay him, move on. Emmanuel Sanders, move on. Like, Antonio Brown looks like those guys were very high-level players. to get Juju to learn, yeah, you can learn from AB's work ethic and you can learn from his production, but there are other things he could have done better that would have helped him remain a Pittsburgh Steeler for life that we hope you can do, because what Juju doesn't have that Antonio has, Juju's a good player, but he doesn't have the transcendent greatness Antonio does to where they are almost forced to put up with nonsense the way the Steelers had been for the last few years with Antonio.
All right, good point. Nick, time now for your fantasy update sponsored by DraftKings. All right, give us one star that's worth the money and one sleeper that's a good value pick for Sunday's game.
All right, the star to me is easy. Todd Gurley's $13,500 DraftKings dollars. I do not think the Rams offense is going to be functional without Todd Gurley having a monster game running the ball and out of the backfield. He's the fourth most expensive player, but to me, he's worth it at $13,500. If you're going to spend that money on Gurley, you got to go real cheap on the other option. How about Gerald Everett, the tight end for the Rams? They haven't used tight ends much at all this year, but we also know the Patriots, where their pass coverage has been the weakest, is against two tight end sets as opposed to the one the Rams like to run. He might be on the field more than he's been most of the year. Only 3,000 DraftKings bucks, a flyer on Gerald Everett.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about Todd Gurley because New England has dominated time possession in the postseason. Man, they have the ball 35, 38 minutes. Todd Gurley, maybe his rushes get cut into there. Do believe he is their featured running back in this, not like the Saints game in a NFC
Championship. Julian Edelman, number one, huh?
Julian Edelman's most expensive DraftKings player.
All right, the big game is just 3 days away, and DraftKings is cranking things all the way up with their Championship Millionaire Contest. For the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a contest for the big game with $3 million in total prizes and a $1 million top prize that you can play for free. Just sign up using promo code FS1 and draft six players for your shot at the top prize.
Hey guys, it's Nick Wright, and I want to tell you about Indochino, a new way for men to upgrade their wardrobe without breaking the bank. Indochino was founded on the belief that you don't need to spend a fortune on a custom wardrobe by taking the premium, made-to-measure experience direct to the consumer. They've created a superior alternative to off-the-rack clothing at ready-to-wear prices. Indochino allows customers to step into the shoes of a designer to create custom suits, shirts, chinos, blazers, and overcoats. They select from hundreds of fabrics and endless options, including lapels, pockets, buttons, linings, and monograms. Indochino couldn't make it any easier to start looking good. Just follow these easy steps. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in the next couple of weeks. My listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering FTF at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code FTF for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. That's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Now, back to the show.
This February, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicks off the 2019 NASCAR season February 17th, only on Fox. Time now for Say What? So the whole city of New Orleans is still upset about the missed pass interference call in the NFC Championship game yesterday. Head coach Sean Payton was asked how he's been coping with the loss. Say what?
I'm back to the ice cream and the Netflix, and there's a point where you just, you know that things aren't changing, and then, you know, you get wrapped up in a new series, a new episode, and it comes back again, and then you get wrapped up in a new series, a new episode, so.
What have you been watching on Netflix?
Man, all of it. You name it.
What do you recommend for the offseason?
True Detective? Checking out True Detective?
No, listen, there's this cross between, you watch the Ted Bundy tapes, and then all of a sudden you watch a series called You, and Ted Bundy met, like, Dawson's Creek, so. It's brutal.
All right, so something on that there. He's wearing the Roger Goodell clown nose shirt.
It's So, for people that don't know,
the T-shirt underneath it. You remember the T-shirt that Matt Patricia wore off the plane? The T-shirt the Barstool guys made. He's wearing that, and he has his zip shirt zipped just far enough down to where you know he's wearing it, but he potentially could deny it. I like Sean Payton a lot. They gotta get over this, man, and they gotta stop just casting about blame to other people. They had multiple chances to win this game, and the idea that they're blaming Goodell personally, like, what did they want Goodell to do? Call into the refs?
Oh, this is what they want.
Uh-huh.
Because he had conversations with Al Riverton right after it happened. He spoke with Roger. Mm-hmm. He wants the blame to be off of him.
Right.
That's what he wants. He wants the NFL to take all the blame, and Sean, he's right and he's wrong, because the NFL, they did what they could do. They blew the call. They said they blew the call compared to making an excuse for it.
Yeah, they're not playing the game over again.
Sean should have moved on after that play, because there's a lot of football to be played. He tends to forget about that.
There's a ton of football to be played. You could have stopped him. You could have scored in overtime. You could have had a better first down call before any of this happened. But this is – Sean Payton is one of the best coaches in this league, one of the faces of this league. And he's wearing the T-shirt Patricia wore.
I wasn't concerned about the T-shirt as much. I'm more concerned about that look on his face, because I have had that on my face coming out of places, and I was, man, it's the next day. Whoa. Jeez, I've missed some time. Whoa.
My issue is just Netflix. It's not the Netflix or the Facebook.
Okay.
You're watching that much Netflix, Sean Payton. It's just I'm watching
Ted Bundy
Netflix.
That doc is
intense. Chilling.
Yeah, you need to break out of jail like Bundy did a couple times.
Time now for stories to start your morning. So LeBron will not return to the court tonight against the Clippers, as many had hoped, many thought. The Lakers, they're 6-11 with LeBron out as he nurses that left groin strain. Nick, how much longer can they afford to be without LeBron James?
Well, they can't afford to be without him tonight. They're playing the team they are chasing for the eighth spot. But this is news now. LeBron thought he'd be playing tonight. And Luke Walton, when he was talked about this yesterday, he left the door open to LeBron playing tonight. And then about 20 minutes later, Lakers medical staff, they released it that he is out. The plan was for him to play tonight and have a game under his belt before they play the Warriors this weekend. And so I don't know if there was a setback. I don't know what happened. But the plan was for him to play tonight. And now he's not playing tonight.
Yeah, the most important thing outside of them saying he was going to play is that if they hadn't struggled, if they hadn't been 6-11 with LeBron being out, it wouldn't matter that much. They would be like Golden State. When's Steph coming back? When he's ready to come back. And as we could see with the basketball that Steph Curry played, after strain is growing, he was ready to be on the court. LeBron is not ready to be on the court. This is the big difference between the NBA and the NFL. If it's NFL, he'd be playing.
He'd have to.
And he'd be gutting it out to the end of the season. This is the right thing for the Lakers long term.
All right, sticking with the team and all their trade rumors. So Lonzo Ball wants a say in where he ends up if he gets moved. He reportedly prefers to land with the Knicks or the Bulls. It's a pretty bold move by Lonzo, CC. What do you think?
Hey, man, I want a lot, too. You know, I really do, Lonzo. Like, I enjoy being on television. I enjoy being in New York City. But I prefer to be in Los Angeles, Florida, someplace that's balmy. Hey, bro. You better discover your game. Forget about where you're going to play. You need to be more concerned about, man, can I shoot some free throws? Is my game going to evolve? Am I a true point guard in this NBA? Like, there's other things I'd be concerned about.
And from what Tanya Ganguly out in Los Angeles is reporting, of all the teams in the league, the Pelicans have one of the highest opinions of Lonzo Ball. And the Pelicans, they might move Drew Holiday if they end up making the Anthony Davis trade. But even if they don't, they want to move Drew Holiday off the ball and would be committed to playing Lonzo 30-plus minutes a night. I know you got drafted by the Lakers and your dad spoke into existence. You don't now just get to pick some of the classic franchises. Well, my brand really is a Laker, a Knick, or a Bull. I mean, what are you doing,
so
Lonzo? Like you said, let's get above 48% from the free throw line and then start making some demands.
All right, moving on to the Super Bowl. Back to football. Lots of questions about the health of Todd Gurley, especially with C.J. Anderson getting the bulk of the carries in the playoffs. Anderson just wants to win, saying that, quote, if Todd wants to play 98% of the snaps, we're going to be okay with that. CeCe, what do you expect from Gurley on Sunday?
Oh, I expect the best outing. What I'm concerned about is time of possession. I need early in the game the Rams to generate a lot of first downs because I think New England will. And I think Todd Gurley, it will switch. It will flip-flop from the amount of carries, five touches, limited action in the NFC Championship game compared to C.J. Anderson having 17 touches. I believe that will be in direct opposite of what it was last week. Todd Gurley, we need to see him. Todd Gurley from the Georgia Bulldogs.
Listen, I don't think there's a way the Rams can win, a realistic way they can win, without Todd Gurley being excellent. But I want to give Gurley and CJ credit for both of them have said and done seemingly all the right things about playing time here. Todd Gurley, we saw no discontent on his face or in his body language.
You know why it don't matter?
Why?
Because they gave Todd Gurley that money.
It's a great point. And CJ's just very happy he's proven to the world. I mean, he's already proven he can be a starting running back in this league.
Man, he is glad he survived Thanksgiving. Didn't nobody put him on the table for no turkey, that little butterball.
Finally, let's talk about Bill Belichick, who enters Sunday with a 5-3 Super Bowl record. A win would tie him with George Halas and Curley Lambeau for a record 6th NFL championship. CeCe, would winning Super Bowl 53 be Bill Belichick's greatest accomplishment?
No, that first Super Bowl. Man, that first Super Bowl against the Rams, the greatest show. You're talking about a mismatch. You're talking about a heavyweight fighting against a middleweight. Lightweight, featherweight, that's what that first upset was. So I've seen him do a great job. I think the overall resurrection of his career from a failure in Cleveland to the success of being they traded draft picks for him there in New England. There's so many stories that are critical to Bill Belichick and his greatness. No, I don't think this. That one that got the party started, to me, that was the biggest because he gained credibility. Not in the football world, but with football players. They'll do whatever. Man, I don't care what kind of talent you have. Guys start calling Belichick. Hey, I'll do whatever you want. Randy Moss. Guys started surrendering. Troy Brown, I'll play defense. Guys start doing different stuff because they believed in his coaching ability. They believed that their career was in better hands with them. Forget what they thought of themselves as a player, but I'm going to trust you. And that gave time for Tom Brady and all these other things to develop. But that first one against the greatest show on turf, which was one of the greatest offenses I had ever seen, the way they dismantled them, the way they took advantage of the rules, a rush in. Instead of him rushing the passer, Marshall Faulk coming out, man, he hit him in space. I was like, we had never seen that before. They changed the rules after that. So for me, that first one against the Rams, that right there was the best thing I've seen him do.
Let me attack this from a little different angle and see what you think of it. The first one against the Rams was the most important, no question. And as far as an individual game, it was as impressive as anything he's ever done because they were two touchdown underdogs, because the offense had not been prolific at all throughout that playoff run, and they knew they were going to have to slow down what was up to that point one of the greatest offenses we've ever seen. But this year, if they win on Sunday, the totality of the playoffs and Belichick's fingerprints all over the games, to me, will be neck and neck with how impressive it was.
What do you mean?
What I mean is Belichick and the staff saw what the Chargers did in the wild card round and said, okay, offensively, here's how we're going to attack that defensive front with seven defensive backs. And defensively, here's what we're going to do that we don't think you're prepared for, showing more zero blitz than we've shown all year long. And winning that football game by the midway point of the second quarter. The next week, they then go on the road when the team is the worst Patriot team we've seen in this era, on the road against the third highest scoring offense in NFL history. And Belichick holds them to 0 points and 32 yards in the first half. Now, yes, the Chiefs' offense got going in the second half, but that they won that game. Their margin was 6. They got 14 up in the first half. If he is then able to also follow it up with slowing down a 13-3, 30-plus point-a-game Rams team, it will, with what I consider far inferior defensive talent to what they had in that first Super Bowl and to what they had in that first era, it will be as impressive of a coaching accomplishment as is on his resume. And it just continues to widen the gap between he and the other coaches. The second most Super Bowl wins is Chuck Knoll with 4. The second most Super Bowl appearances is Don Shula with 6. You mentioned Curly Lambeau and George Halas. Man, they started winning their Super Bowls or their NFL titles in the 20s. Like, this is, we're at least one world war since then. Like, they, what Belichick has done as far as distinguish himself from every other coach of the last 75 years is truly remarkable.
I have to disagree with you a little bit on that, because the fact is, yeah, he shut down Tyreek Hill. He shut down Keenan Allen. He did. But what did Josh McDaniel do?
Sure.
Josh McDaniel dominated the first divisional round. Offensively, that game was over with. What did Belichick have to do? You got a team coming from L.A. playing in the cold. What's happened in the past? They played just like we saw the Chargers play. Kansas City. Who got up in the morning to meet with the quarterback, wide receiver, telling him, I got 8 new plays, we're getting ready?
Josh McDaniels.
Okay, so his ability with his staffing, all that thing, all those things are legendary. But what the offense did compared to the defense performance and shutting down at that time, the greatest offense, the most explosive offense, the most feared offense I had ever seen in the greatest show on turf, what he did to them was defensive. He manhandled them. Totally a mismatch on paper. It was what, Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson. We saw it in a football game, and that to me would be a crown jewel of everything I've seen him do. And this year, it's just another trinket. Another rhinestone in the crown? Yes. You will be able to talk about it. Wow. After being blown out on the road. Man, they went to Kansas City. So great story in itself, but the how it got started, I believe the biggest of them all.
And it's impressive enough. We're talking about which of his Super Bowls. I mean, to get to the point.
Apart.
Exactly. All right, let's move on from football. We'll get back to this in a second. The latest on Anthony Davis now. While the divorce isn't exactly final, it's certainly imminent, as Davis was noticeably edited out of the Pelicans' pregame hype video last night. Despite the bold statement, New Orleans seems to be in no rush to trade AD, reportedly having no interest in dealing him to the Lakers right now. And the Pelicans may even shut the big man down for the season to prevent injury. Nick, what was your reaction to all of this?
My reaction to all of this is it is less likely today than it was yesterday that Anthony Davis is traded before the deadline. But I don't think people should dismiss it as a possibility. I think that I think it is incredibly likely, overwhelmingly likely, that traded or not, Anthony Davis has played his last game as a Pelican. Because if they know they're moving on from him and he has an injury history and they are incentivized to lose games, that you edit him out of the video, he's not on the bench the entirety of the game, he leaves the bench area a little bit early, and they have decided to move on from him, even if he remains on the roster. But people, when they're evaluating this, see, and we talked about this a little bit before the show, they need to recognize the odd ownership general manager situation in New Orleans. Dell Demps is the GM. He's a basketball guy. Dell Demps reports to Mickey Loomis. See, who's Mickey Loomis?
Oh, he runs the operation for the New Orleans Saints. That's right. Sean Payton's right-hand man. And has been in football, and that's how he cut his teeth. Now, the Benson family, they own both franchises.
And what happened with the Benson family, unfortunately, 9-10 months ago? The patriarch of the family passed away.
Yes.
Gail Benson takes over. There was a real family rift prior to
the daughter.
The daughter and the granddaughter and accosting the grandmother in public once and then being written out of the will. And so here's why I bring this up. Gail Benson had a very interesting quote before Anthony Davis made his trade demand, which was, I really like Anthony, but if he wants to leave, you can't hold him back, end quote. And I say that to say this. If Gail Benson says she's at some point, if she hasn't already, going to inquire about what the plan is. And if she hears the plan is we're not going to play him and we're not going to trade him, we're going to wait and see what's out there this summer, it would not shock me if she said, no, you're not. Like, no, we're not going to do is pay this guy another what does he make? $15 million for the final 30 games of the year to not play when we can get people here, when we can trade for other players, when we can maybe create some excitement going into next season. But I think Dell Demps, the guy who is in charge of the basketball decisions, his plan is, let's see who wins the Zion lottery. Let's see what the Celtics end up really wanting to offer. But I think Gail Benson is the wild card in all of this.
You mean because maybe the Lakers might even add more, knowing now that they're going to start competing with other teams if they go past the trade
deadline? I think the Lakers have made their best offer. I think they've offered everything, and that Dell Demps knows that offer is going to be there.
Their Lakers offer isn't going to get worse,
so we might as well wait.
Here's a question. The Pelicans are sort of making Anthony Davis, it appears from the reports, out to be a little bit of the bad guy here by not taking him out of the video and sitting him and all of it, but isn't in the Pelicans' best interest for them to know that he wants out of New Orleans now? Like, let them see what they can get for him. At least he told the team that. Isn't that better than maybe waiting the extra year, paying him, not making it to the playoffs, and then not getting anything back for him?
I think typically in a divorce, compared to saying, I want divorce, people would much rather go get counseling. But when you tell them, oh, you think you did them a favor by telling them I'm getting ready to leave you. Oh, no. Things getting ready to get hectic. That's the way typically it's worked for all my friends.
Well, and see, and it's one thing to say privately, I'm moving on.
You didn't want this getting out.
There's a reason he got fined $50,000.
Yes.
What the Pelicans don't want is this. Is Anthony Davis on graphics next to LeBron, all the speculation. He could have done what technically, and I don't blame him for not doing this, by the way, what the rules say, which is you can request a trade, but you cannot do it publicly.
Yeah, and I just believe if Mr. Benson, God rest his soul, if he's alive, he does it a little bit different. And the reason why, he's a showman. He's about marketing. He always has been dancing on the fields afterwards. All the things, he had the exorcism of all the demons before they won the Super Bowl. He's been a huge part of that community. What happened to Chris Paul, he wouldn't let that happen with Anthony Davis. So I just believe he would go about it a little bit different, even though you still might get the same result. It's in the best interest of the Pelicans to hold on to him as long as possible. Regardless of what LeBron wants, regardless of what Clutch Sports wants, it's in their best interest to keep the star player until everyone can participate. And that means Celtics, move Kyrie Irving, and let's see what the Celtics and Danny Ainge and everyone's got. Let's see who wins the Zion lottery. Let's see what the Knicks have. That's what's best for the Pelicans moving forward.
Knowing the Lakers' offer will still be there.
Right. All right. Yay, offseason.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. Robinhood is a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Robinhood is simple and intuitive with a clear design that shows data presented in an easy-to-digest way. Here's why I recommend Robinhood. No commission fees. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. It's simple. Easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood web platform also lets you view stock collections. Collections are like sectors, like entertainment, social media, curated categories like female CEOs, and analyst ratings of buy, hold, sell for every stock. You learn by doing it. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds. Custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock, such as Apple, Ford, or Sprint, to help build your portfolio. Sign up at first.robinhood.com. That's first.robinhood.com.
Hey, Coach, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here. Good to see you.
Good to see you as always, Coach.
I thought it looked like you wanted to say something.
He did.
Yeah,
he said good to see you.
Oh, that was it. Okay, good. Well done, then.
I totally wanted to say that.
Here we go. Coach, you're a Wesleyan guy, right? Let's do some math. If you added up the ages of Sean McVay and Jared Goff, you're still 9 years shy of Bill Belichick. All right, I actually did the math for you. Binghamton girl. It's pretty impressive that the young Rams are sharing this big stage with such a dynastic Patriots team. And with a win, McVay and Goff would, in fact, be the youngest duo to ever win a Super Bowl. All right, Coach, what do the Rams need to do if they're going to pull this off?
Yeah, from an age perspective, Bill's been coaching for 43 years, and Sean's only been alive for 33 years, so a pretty big mismatch there. To me, and it's hard to look at this as an upset as well. I know the Patriots are a little bit favored, but
tiny.
The Rams during the whole course of the season versus, so that I don't see it that way. But what they do need to do to win the game, the first thing is they can't have self-inflicted wounds. That's the first thing they can't have. And I don't mean the tip ball that's an interception. I mean forcing the throw into coverage, making pressing on offense and making a decision that leads to a turnover, and then defensively not getting lined up in the right spot. You saw it some with San Diego and Kansas City, being able to communicate the motions into stacked wide receivers, not hitting each other and knocking each other off on crossing routes. So those self-inflicted lining up offsides, all those things, that's the first level. The second level is they have to do something that New England hasn't seen. New England is constantly putting the pressure on the other team to adjust to them. Take that power back. Force New England to adjust to something you do. And especially offensively, you control everything that happens. You control the personnel group, the shifts, the motions. Give them something that they have to go to the sideline and talk about. And the same thing defensively. Don't line up in the spots that give information. And the last thing I'd say is, all these mercenaries that came in, all these high-paid guys that came in, all these stars that were traded for, they need to be stars. They need to live up to the billing that they had. And this is why they were brought there. This is their moment to vindicate, you know, where they were drafted and all the things that go with that. So those stars need to be stars in this moment.
So I want to give you a very specific idea and see what you think of it. So the Rams, we know this year, basically ran everything out of 11 personnel, where they had one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers on the field. The Patriots' pass defense was top three in the NFL when facing 11 personnel. The Ringer had this stat. I thought it was great. But when facing 12 personnel, so one running back, two tight end, they were bottom six in the league. They, for some reason or another, did not specifically do well against a personnel package that the Rams very rarely run. Is that the type of thing you're talking about? Looking at things that you don't really have a lot of examples on tape of doing, which is have two tight ends on the field, that also matches up with something the Patriots struggle against, and try to, the week of or in the last week and a half, install more plays like that so it catches the Patriots off guard a little bit.
Well, you can try to get it done with a personnel group, but are there tight ends really traditional tight ends? So you look at Gerald Everett, he's a thinner guy.
Yeah, borderline, not afraid of him.
Yeah, it's borderline 11 personnel when he's in the game. And it also depends on how New England views your personnel group.
Will they change as well?
Or right. Will you be able to get them into a group that you want them to with
with your
bunch of players?
Yep.
To me, it's more about shifts, motions, stacks, bunches, all those things. I love the fact that the Rams go up in quick count. That, to me, that's hard defensively because it forces you to move off of disguise early.
Well, typically, Nick, you're 12 personnel. What it does to the defense is you don't really have a strong side. You put the tight end on both sides, ball's in the middle of the field. That's the reason why these offenses are very, very effective against a defense that's going to play multiples like New England. I like the fact that we're going to change personnel, but we're also going to change what we did. I'm going to take it to another level.
Okay.
12 personnel, two tight ends on the field. Also, I'm going in shotgun. They don't do a lot of running the football from shotgun. When Jared Goff's in the shotgun, they throw the ball an awful lot. So 12 personnel, they're thinking run. I put him in the shotgun where they're thinking pass. So now I put a couple of your components in one equation. And then I run Todd Gurley. Because Todd Gurley, besides being multiples, Todd Gurley's got to get 20 touches. The Rams aren't going to win this game. And to me, they don't have to be in the traditional tailback spot. I would line him up out wide. Put him in motion. You know what? Run him on a speed sweep. New England hates. Now, what they do a great job with leverage. They do not want you to get around the outside. So what about put your best running back in a wide receiver spot and speed sweep him on the outside? And one thing I know with Bill Belichick, what he tries to do, Mangini talks about it all the time, he wants to fight in the phone booth. This has to be the most physical game that the Rams have played all season. They got a better offensive line. I go with two tight ends in the game. I believe that they're bigger and stronger than New England's interior. I believe they can have a huge advantage there. And on the defensive side, man, you got to tackle in space. The way they beat the Rams, the greatest show on turf, was bumping them and tackling. The Rams have to be able to do that to New England. Gronk, Edelman, James White. No matter when they get the football, you need them to be down within 2 to 3 yards. That's the way the Rams, I believe, Nick, having a couple components of what you like and what coach like, throw that at the Patriots.
The other thing that I like that the Rams do consistently is they run move the pocket play, so a boot or a dash to the offense's left. And typically that doesn't happen.
And that's hard for a right-handed quarterback, typically.
Well, it's hard for a right-handed quarterback, but it's also hard for a right-handed defense. You're used to seeing those plays over and over come to your defense's left.
Right.
So you have this, you call it a robot reaction. There's robot reactions to those routes because they're so traditional.
You've they only seen have them so many combinations. Times. You can route read them. When he rolls out to the right, the middle linebacker turns and waits for the crosser.
Yeah, it's like a click whirl reaction to the guys in your program. Now, when it goes the other way, you're not used to fitting those routes with that group of personnel. So you may do 10 reps of boots to your left versus one or two reps of boots to your right. And the Rams throughout the year have done a good job of pressuring teams on that side of the ball.
Coach, we started the segment talking about age. You mentioned the difference between where Belichick is and where McVay is. Does age even matter? Is there any part of the Patriots game plan that's going to be exposing Goff and McVay for their lack of experience in this game more than any other?
I mean, I think Goff more than McVay. I think they are going to try to exploit the lack of NFL football and high leverage football Goff's played. Like, that is an enormous part
How?
Of Well, by what trying to show them things that will surprise him, by doing similar things to what they know what the Rams want to do. And one of the reasons Belichick has teams have won 18 straight games against quarterbacks 25 and under is young quarterbacks, even really good young quarterbacks. They played the best young quarterback last week, and they just said, hey, the thing that you've had the most success with, Tyreek Hill, we're taking it away. And it took him two quarters and a halftime meeting to adjust to figure out how to deal with that. I think they can exploit Goff's lack of experience far better than Sean McVay's.
Yeah, the experience part is a big component of this.
Yes.
And look, I've been in plenty of meetings with Bill where he'll reference things from, you know, 1985 or going against this system over time. I remember in the Philadelphia Super Bowl, we busted out the wide tackle six, which is an old school defensive formation that we really hadn't played. Nobody had played in years and years, but it was good for that, what they were doing in the running game. And they had no idea what we're in. So there's some things that you can draw on historically just because of that wealth of experience. And they have that experience together.
Right.
So they're talking the same language.
Good insight, Coach. Thanks. Stick around. Coming up, should the Patriots give Tom Brady a contract extension? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First. Time now for stories to start your morning. LeBron James will not return to the court tonight against the Clippers, as many had hoped. The Lakers are 6-11 with LeBron out as he nurses that left groin strain. Nick, how much longer can they afford to be without LeBron James?
Well, I mean, they can't really afford to be without him tonight. This is a big game. They're chasing the Clippers for that 8 spot.
Chasing the Clippers.
And by the way, they thought he was going to play tonight. The plan was for him to play tonight, not only because it's the Clippers, but because they have an incredibly difficult stretch starting tonight that then has Golden State on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They don't want his first game back to be against Golden State. I don't know what happened in the last 36 hours to where the plan got changed a bit, but the plan was for him to play tonight, and now he's not playing tonight.
Jenna, I'm not that surprised at all because, man, my source told me when he originally got hurt, this was more severe than what people had thought. So Steph Curry missed 11 games. LeBron, a little bit older, thought he'd miss at least that amount of time. So I'm not surprised. But every game he misses is critical.
Just real quick, C, you were spot on about how that he would be out longer than I thought. But you should be surprised he's missing tonight. The plan was for him to be back tonight.
All right, let's talk about Bill Belichick.
No, I'm not surprised you missed on that one.
Okay, I didn't miss on that one is what I'm telling you.
Belichick enters Sunday with a 5-3 Super Bowl record. A win would tie him with George Halas and Curly Lambeau for a record 6th NFL title. CeCe, would winning Super Bowl 53 be Bill Belichick's greatest accomplishment?
No. Winning Super Bowl number one as a failed head coach. Let's not forget what happened to him in Cleveland. He was trying to resurrect his career. People believing in him. They say, oh, man, he's just a good defensive coach. He was not with Parcells. Can he win? Oh, he goes to New England. He upsets the greatest offense we had seen in the NFL, the greatest show on turf, dismantled them. That was his biggest accomplishment.
I think if they are able to go from 11-5, losing record on the road, to Super Bowl champions with a dominating win in the first round of their play, the divisional round, winning on the road, and then beating a 13-3 Rams team, this would be neck and neck as his most impressive run. The best game ever is, of course, the first Super Bowl against the greatest show on turf.
All right, moving on. Talk about bursting onto the scene. Saquon Barkley had high expectations as the number two overall pick by the Giants. He did not disappoint. He amassed 2,028 yards, becoming just the third rookie to reach the 2,000-yard milestone. And he joins us live from Atlanta. Saquon, good morning. Thanks for hanging with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Hope you're enjoying the week. We have to start off by congratulating you on winning the Pepsi Rookie of the Year Award. This was voted on by the fans across the country. I'm sure it means something special. What does this honor mean to you, Saquon?
It's crazy. It just caps off the year. I get to come to work every single day, be a New York Giant, live my dream, play in the NFL, and then at the end of the year get voted on NFL Pepsi Rookie of the Year by the fans. So definitely got to say thank you to the fans, and also thank you to my teammates and everyone that helped me get put in this position.
Saquon, Chris and I got to see you play in person in college football at Ohio State, a game that you started off with a kick return touchdown. And when you guys were warming up, didn't have your jerseys on, it was pretty clear who the best player on the field was just from watching you. And watching you in the NFL, your ability to take the talent that you showed in college and make some NFL guys look like college defenders is really unlike anything I've seen, at least regularly in my time watching the game. What do you think is the key to your success and what I would consider almost an unprecedented ability to bounce off your first hit, keep your balance, and keep moving forward?
I would definitely give credit to, my work ethic and the things that I do with my trainers and, putting me in uncomfortable positions and working on my strength. That I think ever since I was in high school, that's when I realized what you do in your offseason, what you do in the weight room, and what you do in training translates to the field. And ever since I took that approach, I've been having a lot of success. So I would definitely say giving credit to strength, working on my strength, working on my speed, and working on my flexibility to be able to bend and get low. I weigh like 230 pounds, so I'm considered a bigger back. But to be able to cut like a smaller back, that's something you have to focus on. And I think that's one of the strengths of my play.
Saquon, there was a number of things that myself and others were worried about. You coming from Penn State, great career there at Penn State. We hadn't seen the Penn State running backs be dominant in pro football. Fair or unfair, you removed that myth in your rookie season. I typically would ask, what was the biggest adjustment between college and pro? But since you were so successful, give me what the adjustment's going to be from rookie year to year number two. You talked about your training staff. Now you've been through the league 1 year. What are some of the things you didn't know that you might need to work on so that you might even improve on that great rookie season that you had?
Well, I think not only for myself, but every rookie is going to have this issue. We got a year of tape on us. So now coaches in the offseason are going to be able to scheme on you. So now I got to go back and watch film and see what defenses did to me and where I lacked in my play and where I can be better. So obviously watch film, watch every play I have, learn from the good things I did, and also learn from the mistakes that I've made. And watch, like I said, watch how defenses attacked me. And when defense did have more success against me, what were they doing? What were their fronts? Were they slanting? Were they blitzing more? Figure those things out. And then challenges to elevate my game to another level. And when I mean that, not just talking about only on the field, with leadership also, and also elevating the others around me. And that's going to be the two biggest challenges that, I'm much more than willing to take on. And I believe if I can figure those things out, I can have even a better year.
All right, Saquon, I got to ask, toughest defense you faced this season, which team got out there and you went, whoa, I was not quite prepared for that. Who surprised you the most?
I would say it has to be the first game of the year against Jacksonville. What they were able to do the year prior and all the hype that they had coming around their defense was real in the first game of the year. I think like the first three carries I had, I was hitting the backfield and my first carry I had was almost a safety. So that's when I was just like, whoa. But to be able to go through that game and to stick with it and be able to bust out a long run later on in a game just showed me that all the hard work that I put in. And it's just like college. You know, teams going to do things to stop you and teams going to have some success stopping you. But something that I believe in my game that, you know, that I'm a game changer and I'm able to take it to the zone at any time. So I just got to be patient and take what they give you. But when they give me the opportunity, got to make them pay for it.
Guys in my position love making comps. This player reminds me of this player from history. You were a really hard guy to make a comp to. It was always a combination. It's like, well, catching the ball, he reminds me a bit of Marshall Faulk, but running the ball a little bit of Adrian Peterson. Was there a player that you modeled your game after? Was there a player that, as a high schooler maybe, that you emulated? Or has it always kind of been a one-of-a-kind situation?
No, you know, I've been a fan of the game for a very long time, ever since I was little, and I'm still a fan of the game now. I still watch film on the backs now of the Zeke's, the Todd Gurley's, the McCaffrey's, the AK's, and all the world, and try to learn from them. But I would say, I can't say I modeled my game after him because no one can ever be what he was because he was such a great talent. But Barry Sanders, just the way how he was able to get low on his cuts and just make people miss, I think personally the best ever to play with a ball in his hand, you know. So I can't say I model my game after him, but watch a lot of highlights on him, watch his football life, see the way he carried himself, the things that he did for his teammate when he scored, give the ball to the ref. But I would say that's someone who I guess you could say I tried, but it's never going to happen. It's impossible. He was too of a unique talent, but I've heard comparisons of that, and the fact that I even get those comparisons means so much to me.
I'm going to make you step into year two already. I know this is your first Super Bowl as a rookie, but you talked about the leadership standpoint. You're going to get asked this question more than any other question. Is Eli Manning washed up? Is Eli Manning good enough to lead the New York football Giants to Super Bowl 54?
Is he washed up? I do not believe that at all. When you go back and you look at film, we all left plays out there. I know he's a quarterback in New York market and New York media, so everyone loves to put the blame on him, but it's not about him. When you go back and you watch film and you break it down, we lost 8 games, 7 points or less. And I mean, that's just the NFL, to be honest. And obviously, Chris, you know that. So mm-hmm. We just got to find a way as a team to finish those games. It wasn't that Eli wasn't making no plays. It wasn't that Odell or myself or this guy. It wasn't one person that wasn't making no plays. We weren't playing great situational football, and we weren't finishing our games. And we started to do that a little bit in the second half of the year, but we have to take that approach early on. And I believe that what we have in our locker room and what we have in our team and our staff is special. And I believe that we could take the approach and start playing for each other and believe in each other. I believe we can have a special year next year.
It's no doubt the Giants have some special players. You at the top of that list, the other one being Odell Beckham. It seems as if you guys have created some type of chemistry off the field, even though it seems like your brands are totally different. Give me a couple examples of how Odell has helped you transition from being a great college player to having the great rookie season that you had.
I would say just the biggest thing would be the conversations that we have outside of football, whether if we're chilling or we're doing a team dinner. Even before I was a Giant, just the advice that he gave me, you know, he's been through it all. He's seen it all. He's one of the most, if not the most famous football player, and it happened to him out of nowhere after one catch. All the fame went up and in the way that he played. So I would say that it would be the biggest thing for me with the advice that he gave me. It was almost like a big brother. And, you know, I'm so thankful. I can never say anything bad about Odell. He's helped me so much in my life, not only on the football field, but in my life, and continue to help me grow and continue to learn from him. And like you said, he's a special talent, and I believe that me, him, and with the help of our teammates and our coaches, we could be a special duo and a special team.
Saquon, last week you played in the Pro Bowl for the first time. The weather was just spectacular. I'm sure it was a great experience. Said nobody ever. Tell us about that experience. What was it like? What was it like sharing the field with all the best players in the league right now playing the game?
It's crazy. To make a Pro Bowl as a rookie. You got to cherish that. There's some guys who never made a Pro Bowl, and you don't know if you're ever going to make it again. So I definitely try to cherish it. I got to play defense a little bit. But for me, it was crazy because I trained at Tom Shaw the year before. So I trained in Orlando. I was a dummy. I was one of those guys who was trying to see if the skill challenge was going to work, make sure everything was working. And a year later, I'm competing in the skill challenge. I was able to win the skill challenge. And then you see guys like Russell. You see guys like Andrew Luck. That you see playing when you're growing up, and now you're on the same field as those guys, whether you're on your team or you're going against, and it's just crazy. It's just not only the Pro Bowl rookie year, the year I had, the year we had the team, so much as I've learned from my teammates and my coaches this year, man, I'm really blessed, and it's truly an honor to be in a position I am.
All right, before you go, Saquon, I got to tell you, you caused a big point of contention between myself and my partner Chris Carter this year with all these hurdles you did in-game. I love it. I think it's one of the dopest things the new generation of football players is doing. Chris talks about how dangerous it is. Someone's going to get flipped over, land on their head. What is going through your mind when you're executing that? And how confident are you each time that it's going to end as spectacularly as it consistently did?
Sometimes you watch film, and you watch film on guys like a DB or safety, and you see how he attacks you as a defender. And a lot of defenders like to go low. Being a bigger back, that's a lot of people's answers to bring me down to the ground. And sometimes you watch the film, and you predetermine when I get this chance, if it's an open space or at the right time, that I'm going to jump over that guy. Sometimes it's by the goal line. You're just like, you know what, we need 3 yards. It's 4th and 3. Know what, let's jump and let's find a way to get in the end zone there. But sometimes, you just react. You just react and your God-given ability just takes over. And there's sometimes you can't describe why you did it. And it's crazy to think. But, yeah, so it's all about how defenders attack you. And every time I do it, I try to be confident with it. I never really try to do moves that I'm not confident about. But I know you say that it's dangerous, but I think people really don't expect it because you see it, but it's not a lot. But you also got to be aware that you can't do it too much, so teams aren't expecting for you to do that. But I love doing it. My mama, she hates when I do it, though. Okay. I think the fans all love right. That I do it also, too.
Yeah. Listen to your mama and listen to Chris Carter, all right? Don't listen to Nick Wright, bro.
He's watching film. He's planning it out. It's strategic. I love that.
Saquon, thank you so much for spending time with us today. It was great insight.
And
we
congrats,
really appreciate
man.
You.
And we personally want to invite you. We're here in New York City. We're fans of Saquon Barkley. If you ever want to come to the show, you're invited. I'll let you do all the
thank
jumping you,
guys you
want
so much.
To.
Thank you, Saquon.
Thank
good
you, guys.
Stuff.
Big fans of you guys.
Enjoy the week. Enjoy the game. Much more First Things First right after this. Warriors now.
It didn't even hit the rim, did it?
You guys remember those few minutes we wondered if adding Boogie Cousins to the team would be a good fit or not? Let me save you the time looking it up. Yeah, they're a good fit. Golden State has now won 11 in a row, and through 5 games, Boogie Cousins looks like Boogie Cousins, putting up 22 points in their last game. Head coach Steve Kerr credited Cousins with the Warriors' success.
No dog days this year. It's been nice. I think he personally got us through what would normally be, the tough stretch. And let's face it, we had some tough days earlier in the season between injuries and some drama and all that stuff. So it doesn't feel like the normal January, February point of the schedule. It feels fresher, and I think a lot of that has to do with DeMarcus.
Look, we talked about how much better this team would get when Boogie Cousins came back, but we didn't know what it would look like and how they would all gel and get along and what that chemistry would be like. How much better now is the team now that you've seen him play a couple games?
Well, listen, I think what Steve Kerr said is exactly right. I mean, the Warriors' offense was operating at essentially peak capacity without Boogie, and the offense has operated at the same capacity with Boogie. What has improved is their defense, and that's not because Boogie is some defensive force. It's because the team has had a new reason to engage. They've had a new reason to give their full focus. And when the Warriors are healthy and give their full focus, even without Boogie Cousins, no one's touching them. And so what Steve Kerr has it exactly right. This time of the year, it's before the playoff push, but it's after the beginning of the season, pre-All-Star break, is the time when the Warriors can lose focus. And then And now they're not, because they have to get Boogie involved, because they want the world to see that they can seamlessly integrate him. And so, and the other thing Boogie Cousins gives them is insurance. That if somebody does go down, that a thin team is not that thin anymore, because you have another superstar that can just increase his usage rate. So, yeah, he gives them a margin of error, and he gives them motivation. And that's all the Warriors, the most talented team ever put together, have ever needed.
The Warriors, there's several phases. What they do are very, very special. Their overall ball movement, very, very special. Their spacing, because the pressure they put, because the phenomenal shooters that they have, it's one of a kind. And when they want to, playing defense, they're the best in the league. Like, when they set their mind to it, so yes, Boogie coming back, it gives them a different set of intensity, gives them a different set of goals, game in and game out. And when you've been playing as many playoff games, as many championships that they've won over the last 4 years, you need a little restart like this. It helps out organization. There is a lull period in the NBA. About 2 weeks before the All-Star break, the games get a little more physical. Guys start getting a little more tired. They start getting a little chippy. You start seeing technical fouls. Start seeing guys thrown out of games. The Warriors needed this. In this run that they've been on, they need a couple little things. And they've gotten that. Boogie Cousins, besides Klay, he's a better basketball player than anyone the Warriors have had. So now they got KD.
What do you mean? I'm talking about outside of Steph.
All the players they've had in this championship run. Outside of Steph and KD.
Okay, there you go. Gotcha. I understand what you're saying.
Boogie is a beast. They're doing pick and roll with Boogie. All right. So now Steph decides to, do I go to the hole or do I throw it out to a 6'10 guy shooting a 28-footer? They've never had that type of option. And Boogie brings a type of intensity that I believe it's going to help Draymond, because Draymond is typically the guy that brings the energy game in and game out. So this is what I thought it was going to be. Boogie's a special player.
And it should be noted that let's look at the 14 games before Boogie came back. The Warriors had hit their stride. They were 13-1, and they were outscoring opponents by 16 points per game. In the five games with Boogie, they're 5-0 and outscoring opponents by 16 points per game. And this is why I had one of my friends in NBA front office guys, when the Warriors got Boogie, said, "Oh, I think Nick, you're way overreacting." Because when the news came out, I went on Twitter and I was upset. Let's call it that.
Okay.
And he said, he made the point, their offense can't get better, and he's going to hurt their defense. So how does he make them better? And the point I made was the Warriors didn't need to get better to win another title. They just needed to avoid catastrophe. And if Boogie is nothing other than the world's greatest insurance policy, right? That if someone does go down. Because you had talked last year that you thought that even with Steph, Klay, and KD, how great they were together, if one of them went down, that the team could get got because they didn't have enough depth.
Yes.
Now, that's no longer the case. With a healthy Boogie Cousins, if something were to happen to KD, and it's like, okay, we have the Splash Brothers plus Boogie, that is more than enough. And the fact that it gives them in late January, early February, added motivation to continue refining things, not throw games away, to where they are going to be the one seed this year, unlike last year, all those things work in
their
favor.
I do believe they get better offensively. Well, how do they get better? They have less lost possessions. Because they got another guy that's a focal point that they can go to. They got a 6'10 guy that can shoot three-pointers with the greatest collection of shooters that we've ever seen. Don't tell me they can't get better. What I'm watching is a better version of the Warriors than we've ever seen.
I was going to ask that. So if it was a conclusion before that they were most likely going to go to the finals, what? Is it a foregone conclusion? They've got this thing won now with this team playing the way they're playing?
This is why the most interesting discussion of the 2018-2019 NBA season has been surrounding the 2019-2020 NBA season. And where Kevin Durant's going to go? Is Anthony Davis going to get traded? How happy is Kyrie? What's the LeBron team going to look like? Because we talk about the games right now. Right. The playoffs will be fun, in theory. And it's nice to see what Milwaukee's doing, Toronto with Kawhi. Like, we can find things. But we know what the last page of the book reads. It reads the Warriors winning their third straight title.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan joins us live from Atlanta. That is next on First Things First. Back here, first things first, Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan had an incredible season, almost equaling his career highs in passing yards, touchdowns, completion percentage, and quarterback rating, and he didn't have to travel too far to be able to take in the Super Bowl festivities down there in Atlanta. Matt, thanks for joining us and hanging out with us today. We appreciate you getting up and spending some time.
Yeah, happy to be on with you guys. Thank you for having me.
Give us a little flavor of what things are like in your backyard there in Atlanta. What's everything been like so far this week leading up to Sunday's game?
It's been good. You know, it's been a good start to the week. I think as the weekend, you know, picks up, I think it's going to get busy here in Atlanta. But it's an amazing host city. They do this all the time. They're prepared for it. And it's been a lot of fun so far.
Matty Ice, even after year number 11, and I sat down with you because I did one of your games, you're working on several things to try to improve. A lot of people out there in the football world don't realize that this was one of the best seasons that you've ever had. If after looking at all that film and studying yourself, give me a couple things that you're looking for this offseason to trying to put into your game as you get ready for 2019 football.
You know, I think probably one of the biggest things for us and for myself personally is trying to find ways to use our tight end more effectively. I think this year Austin Hooper started to have a little bit of a breakout year. And then, you know, I think he's such a good fit for us with the wide receivers that we have. He's a matchup problem for people. And so, you know, I'm really going to work hard this offseason to get a good rapport with him and to find creative ways to use him. You've got to target those guys differently. You've got to throw to tight ends differently than you would wide receivers. So that's going to be a big point of emphasis for me.
Matt, pardon me. Matt, this year, as C mentioned, you put up nearly identical numbers to your MVP season. Obviously, didn't maybe get the recognition because the team wasn't as outstanding as it was a few years ago when you did win the MVP. But I'm curious, when you see Drew Brees nearing year 40, Tom Brady in his early 40s, still playing at this high of a level, have you started to reevaluate how long you intend to play and how long you think you can maintain your play at this elite level?
I think those guys certainly give you motivation as a younger guy to, you know, to believe that there's a lot more football in front of you. And they're playing at a high level into their 40s. You know, I think if I can stay injury free, you know, I certainly, you know, intend to play as long as I can and as long as I'm playing at a high level. So I feel really good and I'm really excited about what our future holds in Atlanta. I think we've got a good football team coming back.
Matt, my free advice to you is forget 45. I say 50. I think go with 50. Make that your number. Start telling everyone in the media you want to play till you're 50. I think you'll be golden. Tell people I told you that. Let me ask you.
I like
you,
it. 17 more years. Let's go.
Why not? Like that. Piece of cake. Football's not physical at all. Hey, tell me a little bit about what Jared Goff is going through a couple days before he gets ready for his first Super Bowl. What's the environment like? What's going through his head? How hard is it to focus on the game with everything around him?
You know, I think there's parts of the day that are a little bit different than your normal day-to-day getting ready for a game. You know, for us, we had kind of all of our media obligations early in the morning. And so that was just a different routine from what was normal. But I think once they get into their meetings and once they're out on the practice field, it all becomes, you know, very similar to what you do week in and week out. And I think, you know, the key in postseason, you know, and being successful in the postseason is to make it as normal as possible. And so, you know, my hope would be that he's just getting into a normal routine and focusing on the preparation and getting ready to play this game.
Now, you're trying to get him to be normal. It's the most chaotic week. I mean, it's a world game. It's not just our game here in the U.S. Let's go to on the field. Bill Belichick, you talked about a couple days getting ready, adjusting to the media. As a quarterback, give me some real things, real adjustments, first half to second half, in facing Belichick two Super Bowls ago that you had to face, that Jared Goff is going to have to face Sunday.
Well, they're just so good at you know, diagnosing what you're doing, what you're having success with, and then, you know, making an adjustment and stressing your pass protections. For us, that was probably the biggest thing we had to adjust in the second half was their ability to kind of change their pressure package. And, you know, they were able to create a turnover with a fumble that we had in a critical situation, you know, off of you know, getting us in pass pro. So I think if they're on top of their pass protection and good with their rules and good with their adjustments, that'll be, you know, critical for them in the second half.
A big storyline in this Super Bowl is similar to the one in your guys' Super Bowl, which was a team with a ton of experience in games such as this one against a team with very little experience. And Chris talks about how that's not just on the field. It's the week leading up. It's people asking for tickets. It's, you alluded to, the different media obligations. How much of an edge do you feel that is for the Patriots, who have, amazingly, a Super Bowl routine compared to the Rams, who only have four players who've ever played in this game?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I wouldn't think it's that big of an advantage if the team had been there once or twice before, but going nine times, you know, it's like they do it every year. And so they have their Super Bowl routine, like you mentioned, down, you know, to a science. But I think where it helps the most is like you mentioned, whether it's getting your ticket set up, your hotel reservations, trying to accommodate your family, making sure that everybody who means a lot to you is involved in this game and taken care of, because you want them to be a part of it. But then also being able to compartmentalize that and focus on your preparation. I think that's where experience probably helps the most.
So, Matt, Nick asked you a little earlier about where you see yourself in your career going, if you see yourself playing into the 40s. This is a conversation because, obviously, we talk about this with Tom Brady seemingly every year, how long he could play, how long he could play at this level. How impressive is it to see what Brady's doing at a game that is as physical as it is, to be doing at the top of his game to get his team back to the Super Bowl? How impressive is that?
It's extremely impressive. You know, his dedication, his consistency is really what I find most impressive. I mean, week to week, he is prepared. He plays exceptionally well. You know exactly what you're going to get from him. And you know, for him to be able to do it at this point of his career, you know, he kind of defies, you know, that logic of that age number. I mean, he just continues to do the same things he's done for a long time. And it doesn't look like he's slowing down either. I mean, I saw, you know, he said zero chances is his last game. So he's going to continue to do it. And, you know, I hope to be able to do that myself.
Aqib Talib talks about Julio Jones being the prototype wide receiver. Now, you've been gifted Julio Jones. I know how you personally feel about him. You talked about Austin Hooper, getting some work with him this offseason. Share with fans some of the things that you do with Julio in the offseason, run down fields, abandoned AAU soccer fields and everything around the Atlanta tri-state area when you can't find the place, can't get the Falcons to open up the building for you.
No doubt. The collective bargaining agreement, sometimes you can't work out at the facility, which is hopefully that gets adjusted as we move forward. But, you know, those guys, I'm really lucky to play with teammates that are willing to work anywhere. And so we put in a lot of work during the off season and find times where we can get together individually and just, one, go out there and work on our craft, but also talk through it and really, you know, make sure that we're on the same page so that when things happen in a game, you already know what the other person's thinking, how they're going to do it, and you can read body language. And that's probably the biggest thing, you know, for me, that I've been able to give him opportunities for balls that I wouldn't give other guys because I know him so well.
Matt, you're wearing a shirt that says Delta on it. That can't be a fashion choice. I'm sure you are doing something associated with Delta this week. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I've been partnered up with Delta for a long time, and for me, this week is just about promoting our hometown. Delta is based here. You know, this is my hometown as well, and I'm just so thankful to be a part of this team and to promote what a great job they do for not only this community but really the entire world. And I certainly have enjoyed them being our official airline for the Falcons for a long time.
Matt Ryan, thanks so much for hanging with us today. Enjoy
the week. I'm
going to
jump on Delta in a couple hours and come see you, Matty.
Thank you, Matt.
Come this way, man.
Good stuff. Matt Ryan, thank you. All right, Saquon Barkley will join us live from Atlanta next on First Things First. Stay right here. Back here with Coach Mangini, time for your Subway Choice moment. What are the biggest storylines heading into the Super Bowl? A looming contract extension for Tom Brady. I mean, he will be in the Super Bowl for the third year in a row, the ninth time in 18 seasons, and he is entering the final year of his deal next season. But he is 41, and he wants to play till he's 45. Robert Kraft was asked about extending Brady's deal. Here's what he had to say.
Well, think about it. The last 3 years, we've been privileged to go to the Super Bowl with a quarterback in place. I would be quite surprised if he didn't continue for quite a while as our quarterback.
The reality is I don't think many people thought I would be playing like this, even though I had a great belief that I would. And, you know, I think, you know, RKK has always supported me in my beliefs and thoughts. And, you know, that's why we have a great relationship.
Coach, it's hard to talk about whether a quarterback should be given a contract extension when he's led the team to the Super Bowl, but this is Tom Brady. We know where he's playing at what point in his career. Do you think he should get a contract extension?
Well, extension, well, what do we mean by extension? He's under contract for next year. Are we saying that we're going to extend it 1 year, or are we saying we're going to extend it 3 years?
Well, he wants to play until he's 45, and he's made that very
right.
clear.
No, I totally get what he wants, but one of the things that always has marked New England is their ruthless efficiency. And their ability to look at older players and say, it's time to move on. So whether it was Richard Seymour with a trade or Mike Vrabel with the trade or any number of historic Patriots
players. Lawyer Malloy, the couple Lawyer days Malloy, before the season.
Yeah, so there is. And you need to have that. It's not comfortable to talk about. It's not comfortable when it happens. But it, from a business perspective, they've always done that really well. So an extension may take the form of one additional year, and then it's at what price? Is he still, I don't see it being as the highest paid guy in the league. So maybe it's a little bit of a bridge year to make it look better and more of a year-to-year type thing.
Why would Brady agree to that? Why would Brady, like Brady, if Brady wants to play till he's 45, mm-hmm. and he's made that clear, and Brady also is still playing at a high level, even if he's not league MVP like he was last year, why would he go ahead, C?
Oh, I'm answering.
Oh, okay. Why would he do anything other than say, guys, if you want me to keep playing under market value, I want an extension that so it's my last extension, 3 additional years
takes
that lines
you to 45.
Up to 45, which is what I want. Otherwise, you I'll play out next year, and you guys be in the position where you got a franchise tag. Me.
Well, what Brady is saying when he wants to say, I want to play here in New England, he's also saying, I want to play the New England way. He's not going to say, oh, just because I'm coming back to play, I want it to be different. Because this is what I know is going to happen. RKK, he loves Tom Brady. But Bill Belichick has control of the roster. So there could still be a problem here if Brady tries to change how they're going to do things. Because RKK has already changed that when they traded Garoppolo. They've already altered the plan for Brady to exit already. So now Bill Belichick still has control of that roster, so I'm with Coach Mangini. Like, regardless of what the other players, Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins, although they don't have anything to do with New England and how they decide to do business. So I look at them adding 2 more years to the 1 year that they already have, but Belichick still is going to have the power over that roster at the end. Tom Brady's not going to be making the calls as far as I'm going to do this, this, and this. I would doubt that highly seriously that Belichick would agree to that with the Crafts.
And Tom's personality isn't one to say, you need to franchise me, or what's he going to do, go somewhere else? He wants to be a Patriot. And the whole rule is whoever cares least in negotiations wins. I mean, that's just the way it works. And what leverage do you have when you don't want to leave? You're going to be there. And then what leverage do you have when you want your legacy to be what it should be as this selfless guy who always took less for the betterment of the team? So now to take a hard line at 42, I don't think.
I guess my point is I don't think it would be a hard line to say I'm still going to be playing for half my market value.
But it's not that important to him. Winning championships is the most important thing to him. Making money is not the most important thing.
I totally agree, which is why his give would be, if I wanted to all of a sudden, for the first time in my career, say, I want to have on my resume, I was the highest paid player in the league, my play has earned it, that would be a departure from who he's been. He literally this year made $14 million. The best quarterbacks in the league, highest paid guys, made 28 plus. So he played for half his market value. Is it not a fair negotiating point to say, I will continue to do that, continue to give you the cap flexibility? Can you do me the service of this next contract I sign? It's my last one. Not that we have to do this a one-year extension. Then we're talking about this again a year from now. And if things go the way he wants, a year after that.
I don't see Belichick guaranteeing a player $20 million 3 years from now, and that player is going to be 44. It would be a departure of what he believes football is. So Tom Brady, yes, he wants to play, but he wants to play the Patriot way. It's not as if he's decided, like, he got leverage to be able to go somewhere else. He's already removed that by saying, I want to be here.
And the other big part of any negotiation is precedent. So you look at the precedent of deals, and there really is no precedent to draw from because you don't have a 42-year-old quarterback who's playing at a high level. So you've got to look at, okay,
you might be able to go back and draw some information from Drew Brees, what he did with the Saints. Because he just recently signed a contract extension.
Yeah, and that one is that's what Brady side should go to.
Because yes,
that contract is
$30 million.
Yeah, it's so swollen. But at the end of the day, you heard what he said to Brandon Spikes when Brandon Spikes was talking about not getting the Pro Bowl and upset. He's like, look, we don't play for that. We play for rings. And he's, in order to give them the best chance for another ring, there needs to be money for other people, and it's a zero-sum game. You can't – it's not unlimited
money. It's a hard cap, of course.
Everything about this whole situation has been unprecedented. We talk about the Bill Belichick, he's the one that controls the roster, and yet Garoppolo got sent to San Francisco, when really, if this was anyone else, he would have stayed there, been groomed, and he would have taken over. Is this the same conversation if they give him a 1 or a 2 year and they don't make the playoffs next year? Suddenly, are we having this conversation again? Would we be having it now if they weren't in the Super Bowl right now?
Look, if Tom Brady loses the first game next season, or he throws two picks in the first game, you know, there'll be certain people that'll talk about, you know, how just certain people will jump to these conclusions that he's done. So, yeah, we're always going to be talking about when the demise is coming. Yes. And it's a fair conversation. He's 42 years old, and this is uncharted waters. But, you know, to lock him in for 3 to 4 or 5 years just doesn't make good business sense.
And again, I'm not advocating you lock him in for 4 or 5 years. I think at some point, and this is, I understand the labor part of me, at some point, the player can't always be the one making all the concessions. I would argue
that's not true. This is just the way you want it, Nick. That's not true. Tom Brady has done it a different way, and in New England, it's worked. And we shouldn't change just because our philosophy, labor, our player, or whatever. We shouldn't change that. What Tom Brady wants. Tom Brady doesn't care that much about
it. He doesn't care that much about the money. He clearly cares about playing until he's 45. So if he's sacrificing the money, I would say I would like a contract that takes me till I'm 45.
But, Nick, everybody who goes to New England makes concessions.
Yeah.
You consistently see stars that were acted one way at a different team, goes to New England and makes a concession. There's coaches, there's players that make concessions on contracts. And the reason you do it is because at the end of the day, you want to win. And part of your salary.
And at the end of the day, you trust the guy who's got the money, that they're going to do the right thing to be able to get you to your 10th Super Bowl, to your 11th Super Bowl. Like, so that money, to me, it's irrelevant based on his legacy and the relationship that they currently share.
All right, Coach, thanks. Got to take a break. Coming up, did Kobe have a better career than LeBron? That's still ahead on First Things First. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.